Hello, everybody, and welcome back to I Fucking Love This Movie. Episode 11, I'm going to be talking about the super beast himself, Mr. Rob Zombie. Now, I know episode 11 was supposed to be really Scott, but in true Andy fashion, I did get sidetracked, and I do apologize for that. Really Scott will be a future episode. Think of my Instagram page, or the Instagram page for I Fucking Love This Movie, has coming attractions. Like, it might not be the next episode, but it'll be a future one. So I do apologize for those that were really anticipating the Really Scott episode. I do apologize, and it will be a future episode. So let's get into it. I've been a huge fan of Rob's since the White Zombie days. When I was 8 years old, I started watching horror movies. And I remember sitting there thinking one day, like, you know, scary movies are cool, but wouldn't it be cooler if there was a band that sounded like a scary movie? And I remember thinking about that for a good long while. And then sometime after I thought that, I was watching MTV, and this video comes on. And the first shot of it starts out, this guy in the middle of the street, and he has a sign on him that says, "More human than human." And I'm like, well, what the hell is this? And for some reason, it was intriguing enough for me to just stick around and watch it. It kind of reminded me of a horror movie for some reason. That's probably the only explanation for it. You know, I was just like, what the hell am I getting myself into? You know, it was like Super 8 footage, grainy Super 8 footage, you know, with kids, you know, at a carnival and, like, you know, just being kids and at their house. And then all of a sudden that guitar slide kicks in and you cut to this band playing in the basement and the song's just fucking just amazing. And for me, it was like, these are some of the coolest people I've ever fucking seen. This is like the coolest band ever. I want more of this. What the hell is this? And it was More Human Than Human from White Zombie. And I don't think, not too long after that, I'm pretty sure my dad bought Astro Creep 2000, which was a huge fucking game changer. I mean, La Sexualista was a game changer. You know, I'm pretty sure I heard White Zombie prior to More Human Than Human. You know, Thunderkiss was like a big radio staple when I was a kid. But More Human Than Human made me a fan. Dad went out and bought the Astro Creep 2000 record, and we just wore that fucking thing out. It, you know, I loved White Zombie because it definitely blended my love of music and movies. I mean, one of the things I really loved about that band was they sampled dialogue from movies, something I never heard before. And then when I got older, I started to track down those movies that they sampled from. Like, I watched the original Shaft. The big one was Creature of the Wheel, which was a line from the Charlton Heston movie, The Omega Man. And I remember I bought The Omega Man when I was a kid because, you know, we were all watching The Simpsons one day and they parodied The Omega Man on a Treehouse of Horror. It was called The Omega Man. It was pretty much like Homer being, you know, the Charlton Heston character. And I remember my dad was watching it with us and dad's like, "That's actually a really good movie. It's called The Omega Man with Charlton Heston." And, like, the bad guy was, like, the bad guy from Kiss Meets the Phantom at the Park, which blew me away when I actually got a hold of the movie. But that was, like, one of the first movies I remember, like, I was on the hunt for. Because, like, it was not an easy video to find. And mind you, this was, like, in the 90s. So if, like, Kmart, Meijer, Walmart didn't have it, you went to, like, Media Play. If Media Play didn't have it, if, like, a record store on campus didn't have it, you had to order it, which was a bitch. But I remember going to Media Play and they just had it, and it was pretty pricey, like, in comparison to what I was buying at that point. And I remember watching it and it blew me away. Well, anyway, I was listening to Astro Creep sometime after watching The Omega Man, and the one thing I thought I was uncool, the one thing I thought that made me uncool was, like, I didn't know where any of these, like, sound clips came from. And I remember listening to Astro Creep one day and the Creature of the Wheel song came on, and I'm sitting there listening to this dialogue and it was, like, really familiar. And then I was like, holy shit, that's from The Omega Man. Oh, my God. So, like, I remember I rushed and told my dad. I was like, dude, that fucking Creature of the Wheel song. I didn't obviously say the F word. I was like 9 or 10. It was from the fucking Omega Man. He's like, yeah, I know. That's what I thought when I heard it. So it was just a huge game changer of a record. Like, you know, White Zombie had a huge makeover musically, because prior to La Sexualista, they were like this noise garage rock punk band that was slumming it out in, like, you know, the underground New York scene and stuff, because, you know, Rob and Sean were art school students, and when they did La Sexualista, they became White Zombie, this alternative metal, groove metal kind of band. And I never really saw them as a metal band, so I guess to slap the alternative metal kind of label on them extremely appropriate. And Lost Extra Research was a great record, but like Astro Creep was just like, oh my God, I could go on and on about it, but I'd have to really sit down and really think about it, because there's just a whole lot that you have to examine when it comes to that record. And I didn't write a whole lot. You know, I actually wrote a script for this episode so I could stay on track. So, Game Changer, one of my all-time favorite records. You know, one of the best albums ever of all time. One of the best albums of the 90s. And they broke up shortly after the Astro Creep record, which sucks, but I don't think that you could ever kind of, you know, top that. You know, I hate to say it. I'm not saying that that's not in any of them, but like, I don't think so. It's so hard when a band does such an iconic a record that becomes so iconic. They have to follow that up. And it's hard on them because it's like, you know, that was just lightning in a bottle. We didn't, you know, that was pure luck. And then they got to go and do like a record that's following that. And they're just spending so much time like, oh, I need to, you know, they're examining the last record and whatnot. It's just a big mess. But, so yeah, like if you're going to end your band and never, you know, reform again, like Astro Creep is definitely an appropriate way to kind of go out on. So, and then shortly after, well, they did Astro Creep. They toured for a little bit. They broke up. And then Rob went solo and did Hellbilly Deluxe, which was just fucking mind-blowing. It was like Astro Creep on steroids. And one of the things I loved about White Zombie and Rob integrated into solo stuff was like the presentation of it all. And like I'm talking about like the CD booklets and stuff. And I remember when we got the Astro Creep record, Dad bought it from Walmart and it was edited. The booklet was edited, but the music wasn't, which we thought was really fucking weird. And I remember opening it up and there's just some eye-opening shit in there. Like the woman getting her parts tattooed, if I'm not mistaken, that was in there. Just really unsettling, like paintings and whatnot. I mean, there was none of that in Hellbilly Deluxe, obviously. I mean, it was just Hellbilly Deluxe kind of looked like a old monster magazine from the 60s. But I just remember like I wonder if there's a cool CD booklet and stuff. Because one of the things I used to do was I'd sit in front of the stereo with the headphones on, and I would just devour like a CD booklet, like read the liner notes, you know, look at the artwork, the pictures, and that's kind of how like I, you know, got all this knowledge about music and whatnot, partially. But Hellbilly Deluxe is such a fucking game changer, dude. Like, oh my God, that came out when I was in the sixth grade, and it just was a perfect time. Dragula was all over the radio. It was a killer song. Dad bought the album. He bought it at Walmart again. It was edited. The CD booklet was edited. The music wasn't. We thought that was so weird. And just an incredible, incredible record. I went off and bought it on vinyl a couple years ago. And just, I was immediately, it felt like I was 12 years old again hearing it for the first time. Just such a fucking killer record. I need to go back and listen to Hellbilly Deluxe. But enough about Hellbilly Deluxe, because like I said, I didn't write too much on the script. I just said highlight it. But my favorite Rob Zombie album is probably Educated Horses. And I remember when that was about ready to come out, Rob in the press was just like, you know, I'm going back to basics, doing a stripped down record. And I kind of didn't believe him, because I've heard that same song and dance before from people. You know, they're, you know, they don't do an album for a while. And in Rob's case, he didn't do one for a while because he was, you know, concentrating on his movie career. And I was just like, yeah, probably not, but whatever, I'm still going to buy it. And I remember buying it, and that album ended up immediately became my favorite, because it was, he delivered on his promise. It was a stripped down back to basics record. To me, it's like a really great 70s rock album and completely underrated. And I remember I met him, and I will tell that story later about how I met him. It was a meet and greet. And the one thing I had him sign was my Educated Horses CD booklet. And I remember I laid it on the table for the entire band to sign, which is funny because the only people I don't, because his band at the time was him, John Five, Piggy D, and Ginger Fish. And Ginger Fish and Piggy D, I don't think were on that record. That was the first record John Five was on. And I'm hearing rumors that John Five is no longer a part of Rob's band anymore, which I hope is not true, because John Five is such a huge part of his band. And I guess he brought back Riggs from Hellbilly Deluxe to do a show at the Aftershock Festival, I think it was. And rumors start to fly around that John Five's no longer in the band, which I hope he just couldn't make it. But, you know, I don't know. I'm just, I don't know how to feel about that. I'm kind of, I don't know. But anyway, back to the meet and greet. So I brought it, laid it on the table, and he picked it up and looked at it, and then he kind of looked at me, kind of gave me that, oh, I don't get these very often look, and just signed it, and the entire band signed it. I was so starstruck because I was standing in front of Rob Zombie. I didn't have the courage to tell him that it was my favorite record of his, and he should really consider bringing back some of these songs and playing them live. But I was so starstruck. I was so nervous. So, but like I said, I will tell that story later on in the podcast. I think this is a good place to end a short analysis of his music career. Let's get into the movies. But before we get into his movies, he directed music videos for White Zombie and Rob Zombie, and they were pretty fucking cool music videos. I highly recommend, if you have not watched a music video directed by Rob Zombie, please hit up YouTube after listening to this podcast, or hell, pause this podcast and do yourself a favor and, you know, watch his music videos. They were really awesome, especially like the ones he did for White Zombie. I'm not saying the stuff that he did for solo stuff was just subpar, but like, I mean, just, you know, it just was cool. But my favorite thing he did when it came to his music videos was on the back, I think it was like the last page of the Hellbilly Deluxe CD booklet. It's a Hellbilly Deluxe, the video album coming soon. And I was like, holy shit. Cause one of the things I loved watching growing up was like music VHS tapes. And because it was stuff that you wouldn't see on VH1 or MTV, it was uncensored. So it was a treat. Like if you really loved a band, you've got more of an insight of them either live or in the studio and whatnot by watching these like videos that they release. I mean, now you could watch pretty much anything on YouTube and they can put out whatever now. That's one of the great things about YouTube now, is like a band, you don't have to wait like 2 years for like a home video to come out. You can just watch it on YouTube. And that blew my mind. I was like, holy shit, he did a fucking music video for all these songs. Like, dude, this is going to be crazy. And it never came out. It eventually came out, I think, in the 2008 reissue of Hellbilly Deluxe, because it was like a bonus DVD. And even in my 20s, it still blew me away. I was like, holy shit, each of these videos are so dramatically different from, it was crazy. And I think all those are on YouTube too. So if you want to sit down and just devour the entire Hellbilly Deluxe video, please do yourself a favor. So he did that. And he often said his music video directing days were kind of like his film school. And what a better way to cut your teeth like making movies than making music videos and stuff. I mean, you have to shoot enough footage for like a 3 or 4 minute clip, or even 5-6 minutes, or if you're doing something conceptual, you know, kind of have a good idea of it. So, and then after his music video started gaining reputation and, you know, gaining momentum and whatnot, movie studios were starting to come after him. He was doing pitches. He did a pitch for a Crow sequel, which never happened. And then he did one, I think it was called The Legend of the 13 Graves or something, which ended up becoming House of 1,000 Corpses. So House of 1,000 Corpses, you know, gets greenlit by Universal. And, you know, if you've seen it and you're actually thinking about like it on paper, for Universal to fucking release this movie, a major to release this movie, is insanity. You know, you think about, like, that's one of the things I loved about Universal back in the 80s. They would release anything. And that's what made them great. I mean, you know, they had, like, they had the John Hughes Fair, and then they had shit like Legend. And Legend's not shit, but, you know, they had stuff like Legend, and I'm pretty sure, like, The Last Starfighter, Nightmares. I mean, the list goes on with all the stuff they released, but that was one of the reasons why they were my favorite major in the 80s, because they released anything. And it was great, you know, for like every, you know, like 16 Candles, Weird Science, Breakfast Club, they had something just off the fucking wall. Brazil, you know, and they were just kind of repeating that with House of 1,000 Corpses. I wish they would have just kept on with it. But at that point, they had so many other like film companies they owned. They could just release that under another moniker and just, you know, wash their hands of it. So the way Rob described it in interviews and stuff, maybe even in the commentary, whatever, however you say it, that he did for the movie, he said that they just threw money at him. They're like, oh, I'll just make it. We trust you. And then I remember I got excited seeing like little press releases about like the making of it. And then like seeing him behind, like sitting on the director's chair, like watching the monitors, or like him like you know, looking through the lens of the camera, I got excited. I was like, holy shit, he's doing a movie. Like, that's going to be like the, like, his music videos are crazy. I can only imagine what a Rob Zombie movie is going to be like. So the movie gets done. They didn't like the ending, so he had to reshoot the ending, and then he put his first cut together, and they didn't like it. They're like, we gave you all this money. What the fuck is this? This is unreleasable. We can't do an NC-17 movie. And the one thing about major studios, most major studios, is they will not release an NC-17 movie, which makes sense because, you know, you can't advertise an NC-17 rated movie as much as you can as a, like, a G, PG, PG-13 rated R movie. You can't play everywhere. You know, you got to really... It's just a big mess. I don't really think they deal with that anymore. Because anymore, it's like, okay, this is like NC-17, maybe X if they even still use that. So, like, just cut a version for theaters and we'll release, like, the unrated one, like, on home video. But back when this was being made, that wasn't an option. So they shelved it. And rumor has it that MGM was interested in buying it and releasing it. And then... a rumor with that, Rob was interviewing somebody. I think it was for... he was interviewing Ben Affleck for, like, Daredevil or something. And Ben was like, hey, is your movie coming out? And Rob's like, yeah, you know, it just proves they have no souls or something to that effect. He said it on a... there used to be this TV show called Dinner for Five. And Jon Favreau, who directed... I think he directed Swingers. And, I think he did Iron Man 2. Like, the Iron Man trilogy. He had this TV show where he sat down with, like, a who's who of, like, Hollywood. I mean, he had, like, Roger Corman, Kevin Smith, Mark Hamill, and he had Rob Zombie on it. He told that story. So if you're really interested in the real story, please check that clip out. He said that, like, yeah, they have no souls or something. So MGM didn't release it. So it just sat, and it was like a bidding war because Rob was trying to buy it back. I don't know if Rob bought it back or Lionsgate ended up buying back, but Lionsgate agreed to... distribute it into theaters and whatnot. And I remember it was like 2-3 years after the movie got finished that this all happened. And I remember my dad saw it because a copy had leaked out. And my dad was one of those people that would always tell me about something cool. And then, like, when I wanted to listen to it or see it, he would shoot me down. And I remember he came up to me. He's like, hey, man, I saw that Rob Zombie movie. I was like, what? How did you see it? And he told me how he saw it. I was like, can I watch it? He's like, oh, absolutely not. It's like, they all know you can't see this for a while. He played it up so bad, like it was this like gory graphic film. It was just like the worst movie of all time. Not like in content, but like not like in, you know, like the worst movie as far as content was concerned. That's what I was about to say. I'm on my third cup of coffee. Forgive me. So like he built it up, and you know, after seeing it, I mean, it's pretty graphic, but it's not as graphic to what I have seen since then. I remember I was telling him about this movie called Cannibal Holocaust because I recently bought it. I was like, you need to see this movie, man. This movie's fucking brutal. And he watched it, and I like asked him. And mind you, this guy grew up watching Faces of Death like in the 80s. I mean, we all know it's fake because the director came out and said it was fake. But, you know, in 1989, everybody just assumed it was real. And it didn't really faze him. I was like, what'd you think? He's like, fucking nothing I've never not seen before. And I was like, remember that time you told me House of a Thousand Corpses was like the most graphic movie ever made? And he's like, fuck you. And we laughed about it. But to this day, that was the only movie I snuck out and saw. Because I, you know, my parents were like super strict. Well, my dad was, of what I've seen. So like, that was the worst thing I did, was like go see movies that I wasn't allowed to see. Well, I was at a friend's house one weekend, and he's like, dude, stay another night. Let's go see the Rob Zombie movie. It's playing at the Dollar Theater. And I was like, shit, yeah. Normally, I was just kind of like a wuss and just like, oh, I shouldn't do that. What if my dad finds out? But that one, I was like, yeah, well, hell yes. Let's go see House of a Thousand Corpses at the Dollar Theater. So we went. I remember the theater was packed. And it exceeded. I knew it was going to be a fucked up, crazy movie. And it exceeded my expectations. And it was so great because I think that to this date, it's... until I saw 31, that was like the most people in the theater for a Rob Zombie movie. Well, I take that back, the Halloweens. And like, it was so funny because you could pick out his fans and you could pick out people that like had never really heard of him or non-fans. Well, they would be in the same category, non-fans. I should have just said that. But like I said, I'm kind of, coffee's kicking in. I'll take another sip. So back to what I was saying, you know, you could pick out his fans between the non-fans, and his non-fans just didn't know what to think. You know, we were loving it, the fans. We were fucking just eating it all up, but his non-fans were just kind of like blank. And I remember leaving the theater, and they're just like, what the fuck was that? And I was that dorky little kid. Well, I was a teenager, but still. I was that dorky teenager that was like, that was so awesome, man. And it immediately became one of my favorites. And I remember when my dad bought it on DVD. He's like, I think you've earned it. Let's watch it. And I pretended like I'd never seen it before. And then years later, I was like, dude, I literally snuck out to go see that movie. And dad, years later, came to the conclusion. I was like, well, if that was the worst thing he did as a teenager, he's like, I think I did an all right job. But it immediately became a classic. And House is just like his calling card. I mean, you could look at his music videos as like an indie film. But this is like his calling card. This is like a Texas Chainsaw Massacre, his Night of the Living Dead, you know, just this Phantasm, really. Halloween, you know, just, and it was so well made, so well done. I know he's very kind of hard on himself. He's like, oh, there's so many flaws and stuff. But like, he literally made like a studio movie, you know, kind of, but in Rob Zombie fashion. I mean, he pulled the resources he had with Universal and just made a really well done movie. And it's funny that I was thinking about this the other day and, you know, seeing the classics like Texas Chainsaw Massacre, The Exorcist, Dawn of the Dead, Night of the Living Dead, Phantasm, The Omen, Halloween, you know, that kind of prepared us for this. This kind of, I felt, catapulted us old school horror fans into the new generation, really. And it's kind of funny that, like, the newer generation kind of doesn't have a luxury because they have a whole other, you know, slew of films that they can just get into horror. But, like, you know, myself and generations before me, you know, we had to do the classics. And then the generations before us, it was like the Universal Monsters. Like, this newer generation can just go see House of a Thousand Corpses and just kind of go from there. Their fascination can start there, which I think is really cool. But, so, still classic. I need to rewatch it. There's a rumor that an uncut version exists. Rob kind of shoots it down. I would like to see it, but if we never see it because it doesn't exist or they just don't want to release it, my feelings aren't going to be hurt because I feel like House of a Thousand Corpses is a good enough movie that I don't think it warrants another cut. So the movie was pretty successful for Lionsgate, which prompted the sequel, The Devil's Rejects. And it's like I said, I love that House is this nicely well-made major studio movie, but done in Rob Zombie fashion. And Rejects is a complete 180. It's a gritty road movie that's almost like a Western. And that's why I love it. And one of the things I love about that movie is, you know, you take these characters, the Firefly family, out of their house into public where they could just terrorize. And that was kind of like a terrifying aspect. These horrible fucking people out in public. You know, and that's why it's a great movie. It's probably one of the best direct sequels in cinema. He's cited movies like Bonnie and Clyde, The Wild Bunch, Badlands, and Texas Chainsaw Massacre has an influence on Rejects. And I've only seen The Texas Chainsaw Massacre, Badlands, and The Wild Bunch. And I feel that's really appropriate. And that's one of the things I love about Rob is like, when he does a movie and he tells you his influences and he tells you movies that he loves, like somebody like me who's a huge fan will go out and go see these movies. So he's literally kind of giving you like a film school a little bit. And that's why I love about directors like Rob and Tarantino. They're always just throwing stuff out there. They're just like, oh, if you like this movie or if you like what I did here in this scene, then check this out. And that's one of the reasons I loved Once Upon a Time in Hollywood was, you know, the influences that he had in that movie. And some of the movies you mentioned, I was like, oh, shit, I'll go, you know, see the this movie and whatnot. So where am I going with this? So the movie was supposed to be kind of an ending to the story with the Firefly family. And, well, Captain Spaulding is pretty much a part of that family too. Spoiler alert, which I warn you, spoilers may happen. I felt the ending of that was completely appropriate. It was a completely appropriate way to end their story. You know, you know, they can't run anymore. They get shot down by the police. I figured that was a great way to end the films with the Firefly family. They talked about prequel at one point. I don't know. I thought House was a good enough movie not to warrant a prequel, but, you know, I thought this was the best movie because it was such a well-made movie, such a great movie. I love how gritty it was. I felt it was a great way to end the story with these people, these characters, but we would later find out that's not the case, and we'll get into it later. So after Devil's Rejects, he got involved with the Halloween franchise. Now, this is probably his most controversial move in film to date, because Halloween, one of the most iconic horror films of all time, one of the most iconic films of all time, not just in the horror genre, but just in film in general, you know, there was talks about it and get remade. People were like, oh, you shouldn't remake that. It's a classic, which I kind of get why people think that, because it is a very iconic movie. It's still a well-made movie. The movie's 40-some years old and still just, and it still works. But on the other hand, like, I think the franchise wasn't doing, you know, the character any justice. It just got real, I mean, I don't know. I mean, Busta Rhymes was in it at one point. No offense to Busta Rhymes. And it just, I don't know, because, like, I love the first two Halloweens. Thought they were great. I love Season of the Witch. You just have to pretend that's not a supposed to be a Halloween movie. Just pretend it's Season of the Witch. 4 and 5, I wasn't too crazy about, because I felt that they were trying to be too much like the original Halloween, which I kind of get. You know, they went back to roots, back to basics with those films, and it worked, I guess. Curse was interesting. Halloween 6. Halloween 7, H2O, that was pretty good. I mean, there was stuff that it could have been better. And then you had Halloween Resurrection. I think that's what came after H2O. And I just wasn't crazy. I don't even think to this day I've finished it. I didn't even watch Curse until I bought the big Blu-ray set. And they were like, watch the producer's cut. It's better than the theatrical one. And they were fucking right. So back to what I was saying, the franchise wasn't doing anybody any favors. So, like, you either have a reboot or a remake, and Rob's was both, and people weren't cool with it, and I get it. I was kind of mixed at first. I was like, why are they remaking Halloween? Like, the first one was so great, and then Rob's name got attached to it. I was like, all right, let's see what he can do with this. It became, the making of it became more of a studio picture, like, movie than House was. I mean, the studio was super involved, giving him notes. So when you watch it, it's kind of like a studio movie, but it's really a Rob Zombie movie too. It's extremely clever. I like what he did with that movie, because he was talking about doing a prequel to Halloween. He's like, well, we shouldn't remake it. Let me do a prequel. And this movie's kind of like a prequel / remake kind of deal. I just watched it last night. I just like how all of a sudden, like, Laurie Strode came from, like, this white trash family and whatnot, and then she lives with, like, a very well-to-do family and whatnot. I just love the angle he took with that. I love Malcolm McDowell being cast as Dr. Loomis. I just like how he kind of went more in-depth with those characters in Rob Zombie fashion, because it was a different take on it. And I know not everybody was too crazy about it, but hey, it's Rob Zombie's Halloween. It's not Rob Zombie presents John Carpenter's Halloween. And that's something that some people have a hard time kind of wrapping their heads around. And I get it, but, like, it's Rob Zombie's Halloween, not Rob Zombie's John Carpenter's Halloween, whatever. So I enjoyed it. I thought the music was pretty good in it. I remember when I first seen it in the theater, or it just may have been on video. I don't remember, because I remember they had the theatrical version, and then when they reissued it to home video, it was like an unrated version. And I remember God of Thunder by Kiss being played. I was like, holy shit, you never hear this. And then the scene where Sherry Moon's dancing and they play Love Hurts, I was like, dude, like, your music supervisor's fucking killing it, man. Or hell, maybe you wrote those cues in yourself. I don't know. I remember seeing it. I saw it Labor Day weekend, which I think, even to this recording, I'm not too sure, it's still the highest grossing Labor Day weekend movie. I remember seeing it. I saw it on Saturday. Absolutely loved it. And I remember the next day I went to go see Rush at Germain Amphitheater on the Snakes and Arrows tour. And that's a pretty iconic show because, you know, it's Rush. And that was one of the last shows Germain Amphitheater had. For those of you that are not familiar, Germain Amphitheater was this outdoor amphitheater in Polaris. And it was just fucking cool. Like, I looked forward almost every summer to going to a show there. And I went to go see Aerosmith in 97 there. I saw Van Halen on the 3 tour with Gary Cherone there. And then I saw Def Leppard there. And then I didn't see a show until probably 2004, the R30 tour with Rush. But so I was like, oh, when I graduated and became obviously an adult, I was like, oh, I'm going to make this like an every summer thing. I'm going to go to a show. And that just didn't happen because They closed down shortly after Labor Day weekend, and they tore it down, and it's now an IKEA. So, rest in peace, Remain Amphitheater. So, but for some reason, I have the Grindhouse. So, released before the Halloween movie, because my memory serves me right. If my memory serves me right, correction. Grindhouse came out, and Grindhouse is one of my all-time favorite. Actually, Grindhouse, more or less, is probably my favorite theater-going experience ever. I remember seeing trailers for that movie, and I'm like, what the hell is this? And the names Robert Rodriguez and Quentin Tarantino flashing. And it's like two movies in one. And I remember, like, at that point, I was really getting into, like, exploitation movies, and I'd always, you know, hear or read about, like, you know, double bills and stuff. And this movie called Grindhouse, which I think came out before it came out before Halloween. I remember. I do apologize. I've tried to keep it in chronological order. Sometimes I do fail at that. You know, I'm a human. I'm work in progress. We all are. So I remember I saw it opening day, and I remember going to the theater, and they had like I shouldn't tell the story. I should have an episode about Grindhouse, but I'll try to keep it brief. I remember going to the theater, and they had like signs posted on the box office that said Grindhouse is two movies. Please stay for until the house lights come up. I was like, it was like opening day, and they expected problems. So I went first showing, blew my mind. And one of the things I really loved about Grindhouse was like the fake trailers, and Rob did one, She-Wolf of the SS. And it was probably the most insane trailer out of the bunch. I mean, next to Machete, but She-Wolf of the SS was like more insane. And after that, I ended up watching, I think it's Isla, She-Wolf of the SS, or I think that's the name of the movie. The movie where like the Nazi like guard has sex with the American prisoners of war and castrates them if they have an orgasm, that movie. And I watched it because they used Hogan's Hero sets. And growing up, that was a TV show I watched a lot because my dad's a huge Hogan's Heroes fan. Actually, as of this recording, he's actually like rewatching the entire series. And I remember I made my dad watch it. My dad's like, what the fuck is wrong with you? You know, castrating a man if they orgasm. I'm like, that's just a fucking movie, dude. So because I remember in the press, Rob's like, oh, Isla, She-Wolf of the SS. You know, this was a huge inspiration. So I actually got it off Netflix when they delivered DVDs to your house and watched it. So I didn't get any further in the Nazi exploitation realm of film. That's just fucking weird. But, you know, in the 70s, that was a real controversial thing. And that was that's one of the things I love about 70s films is just like, you know, it's like, what can shock people? Oh, let's make exploitation movies about, you know, Nazis that are just horny. You know, that was pretty much the gist of it. I think the only art Nazi exploitation movie was a Night Porter, but if you are interested in that, look that up. So yeah, he contributed that, and he said he had like shot more footage. I think it's like 30-45 minutes. It could have been longer. Hopefully we see that cut. Anyway, Grindhouse will be a future episode, because that day, like the first time I seen it, was crazy. I got my first car accident that day. And so yeah, that'll definitely be a future episode. I don't know if I will cover it with the Tarantino, or maybe someday I'll do a Robert Rodriguez deep dive. Who knows? But stay tuned for that. And hell, even my podcast is coming attractions too. So shortly after that, Halloween was obviously successful enough because it's the highest grossing Labor Day weekend movie. And so that warranted a sequel. He didn't really want to do a sequel, but I'm glad he did a sequel, because Halloween was a Rob Zombie movie, but you can tell the studio interfered with it. But Halloween 2 is definitely more of a zombie movie. And I love the two types of sequels that I love are direct sequels that do it right. You know, case in point, like Back to the Future Part 2, Empire Strikes Back, or even like The Godfather Part 2. I'll even throw that in there. Or like crazy chaotic sequels that just have no rhyme and reason why they're just so fucking out of control. You know, like Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey was just out of fucking control and crazy. RoboCop 2 is like the perfect example. You know, RoboCop 1 was crazy, but like 2, it's on a whole nother level. And I felt Halloween 2 was kind of that. It was fucking crazy. It was unsettling. You know, it was kind of depressing. And just, it's a wonderful movie. And I remember seeing that opening weekend. And again, like, I had flashbacks to seeing House of a Thousand Corpses. Like, you know, you could tell who was a fan and who wasn't. And I remember people leaving that theater goes, well, it wasn't as good as the first one. I thought it was fucking better. You know, I love the original Halloween 2. I think it's Halloween Kills, like this whole new sequel thing that they're doing. You know, I don't know. That one wasn't too bad. So I love the original Halloween 2. And this one I loved too. Rob made it his own. Just if you haven't seen her or watched it once and just kind of was like, that was horseshit, please give it another try. It's just fucking crazy. And they talked about doing a sequel. And this is when Mr. Rob Zombie bowed out and said, I've said what I said with the Halloween. So I'm going to do something else. And one of the cool things about Halloween 2 was the soundtrack. I remember, I think a Misfits song is on it. I think Halloween 2 is on it. I remember sitting in the theater watching it, and I heard fucking Diamond Head's Am I Evil playing. I was like, holy shit, man, he fucking deep cuts. Because, like, the first Halloween soundtrack, I mean, you heard, you know, pretty basic tunes. Good songs, but you heard pretty basic songs. But, like, this one, he just kind of was like, I'm going to throw shit that people, you never hear in the movies. I kick out the jams. So, after that, he did a direct-to-video release called The Haunted World of El Super Beasto. And I've only watched this once, not going to lie. You could tell this dude grew up watching Saturday morning cartoons, and it kind of has that feel for adults. You could tell the Ralph Bakshi influence, and Ralph Bakshi's a fucking awesome, awesome animation director. He was the first director to do a Lord of the Rings adaptation, and he rotoscoped. And for those of you that don't know what rotoscoping is like he would shoot live-action footage and draw over it, and that's how he animated. And I fucking love his movies. Wizards, great fucking movie. Fritz the Cat, and the Haunted World of El Super Beasto is like fucking Fritz the Cat, but done Rob Zombie. Great movie. I only watched it once. That's another one I really need to watch again. I need to watch all of his movies again. I mean, aside from the Halloweens, I'm currently rewatching those. So his next film, and for me, it's the best movie he has done. You know, I'm not saying that, like, the movies I feel that kind of rank under this are terrible, but for me, I feel it's, like, the best movie he's done. I mean, he's a great director. I love him. And it's, you know, but for me, Lords of Salem is the best movie he has done. Best horror movie he's ever done. And, you know, he knows how to sell his movies to, like, horror, like, not even horror fans, but, like, film nerds. Like, he said, everybody's like, well, what's this movie like? And he's like, imagine if Ken Russell directed The Shining. And, dude, Ken Russell's fucking out. You thought Kubrick was out there? Fucking Ken Russell's even way out there. He did a movie in the 80s called Altered States. And mind you, this guy was kind of like a renegade back in the 70s. Like, he did these fucking crazy movies like The Devils. And he did the film adaptation of The Who's Tommy. And that movie's fucking crazy. I love movies that are just fucking crazy for no reason at all. And the director just is kind of like, huh, I thought it was pretty normal. So Ken Russell did this movie in the 80s called Altered States. It has William Hurt in it, and it's about these college professors that do psychedelics in isolation tanks for research. And, like, he does this one that's so powerful, he just doesn't know if it's, you know, real life or not, or he's hallucinating. Fucking great movie. Trippy fucking movie. And we all, of course, know what The Shining's like. So, like, when he's like, it's like Ken Russell directed The Shining. I was like, shit, fucking count me in, dude. Because I had seen Altered States at that point. I remember I saw it on a Monday. Because I used to be off work on Mondays. I used to work 4 10-hour days. And our overtime day would be Monday. A schedule I still kind of miss. So, Mondays, I'd get up somewhat early. And I'd go to the movies. Because it was like, it was matinee. There was nobody in there. I think the worst I'd probably have to deal with is probably like a senior citizen. Hell, they're not even, that's not even the worst. So I went, I traveled probably about half hour. That was the closest theater that Lords of Salem was playing in. So I went, it was like me and three other people, fucking blown away. I was like, holy shit, this, you know, House Rejects, the Halloweens, they're all great, but this is the best movie he's ever made. Like, just such a great fucking movie. I love it. You know, he dived into, like, witchcraft and, like, you know, the Salem witch trials, and he did it in Rob Zombie fashion. That's one of the reasons I absolutely love it. I love this movie so fucking much. It's tattooed on me. Yeah, I'll show a picture of it for the cover art, the thumbnail I'm going to make for the YouTube upload of this. But and this would have been a perfect this would have been Lords of Salem should have been his swan song from horror, because he talked about taking a break from it, and he had all these other projects that he has not done as of this recording. He was going to do one about the Broad Street Bullies, the Philadelphia hockey team that was just brutal. I mean, you thought the guys in Slapshot was fucking badass. This was like the real fucking deal. These guys were just out of control crazy. Google some of the stuff that Rob did his research on, or hell, even Google fucking Broad Street Bullies, you know, hear it from the source. One of the things I love about Rob is he's such a classic fan of film. Like, he likes the silent era stuff from like the 30s and stuff. And he was going to do a Groucho Marx movie, which, you know, if you've heard of Groucho Marx, because he's mentioned him in several of his films, he was going to do one about his later years. I guess, you know, Groucho kind of wasn't doing good. You know, his movies weren't getting shown again, because that's what they did back in the day before home video. Like, studios were just reissue movies and stuff. And, you know, that's how you saw him. You either saw him on TV or you saw him at the theater again. And I guess his movies weren't getting re-released as much. You know, he was old. He had strokes. And some guy wrote a book about being his assistant for like the last couple of years, and Rob was going to do a movie about it. And I was like, holy shit, that'd be an awesome. I wanted to see Broad Street Bullies more than the Groucho Marx movie, but if he had the chance to make the Groucho Marx movie, dude, fucking count me in. And then he was going to do a movie with Bret Easton Ellis, who wrote the books Less Than Zero and American Psycho. Obviously, those became movies. And he was going to do like a Manson movie. It was just teased about. But Rob's one of those directors that, you know, he did horror pretty well. I wholeheartedly believe that he'll do like a movie in another genre pretty well. Just, he needs that opportunity. I have faith that he can do a movie outside the horror genre that would be better or just as great as horror stuff. And I was really looking forward to seeing something different from him, and he unfortunately didn't get that chance. So after Lords of Salem, and this isn't one of his movies, but it's a concert film, as he puts it, and I love concert films, you know, like, you know, Elvis on Tour and Elvis, That's the Way It Is, you know, the Rolling Stones ones, The Song Remains the Same, Pink Floyd Live at Pompeii, the list goes on. I love concert films. The fact that there was Genesis in concert, last one I'm going to mention, just the fact that they would shoot a band on like 35 millimeter, or maybe sometimes 16, I don't know, but most of the time it was like 35 millimeter, and they would put that in the theater. It's fucking insane. I mean, you could have seen these bands live back in the day, obviously, but the fact that you went to a theater to kind of have that experience if the band never played your city, it's just amazing to me. So he did the Zombie Horror Picture Show, and this is right around the time I saw him and met him. Now, this was the second time I seen him. First time I seen him, it was the on the Hellbilly Deluxe 2 tour, which I think is a great record. I think Hellbilly Deluxe is kind of like a good bookend to the first Hellbilly Deluxe, you know. Great record. One of my favorite tracks on there is Sick Bubblegum. So he was on tour. Me, my brother, and my dad went to go see him. It was the day before Thanksgiving of 2009. So we get there. He plays the Promo West Pavilion, LC Pavilion, Kemba Live, wherever. It's a venue in Columbus. They change their name every so often. And I remember we got there. We were second row. I was super stoked because I'd always wanted to see Rob Zombie live. My dad saw Rob Zombie on his first solo tour at Hair Arena. And I think Monster Magnet and Fear Factory opened. And I was just so fucking jealous. I love Fear Factory. And so I was super stoked. But there was this couple that was standing in front of me. And they had, like, shopping bags. So, like, to kill time, I just talked to people in the crowd. I was like, hey, what's up? And then I saw they had bags. I was like, hey, like, where'd you guys go shopping for this? They're like, oh, we did the meet and greet. I was like, oh, that's awesome. Did you guys like win a contest or something? They're like, no, you go on his website and purchase meet and greet passes. I was like, no shit. And they're like, yeah. So that right there, like, I was like, next time he comes to Columbus and offers meet and greets, I'm going. So fast forward to, I think it's 2000. Well, what year is it? 2013. I think he's on the Rockstar Mayhem Festival, the touring festival that year, with Mastodon and Machine Head and a whole, I think Five Finger Death Punch was like another band, like another headliner they had. I don't live anywhere near like an outdoor amphitheater, so I didn't go. I mean, I could have went to Cincinnati, but I didn't really want to go that far to go see all those. I should have, though. I regret not going to that. So It was like April 1st of 2013. I was on my phone and Ticketmaster announced a show at the LC. It was Rob Zombie, Mastodon, and Machine Head at the Promo West Pavilion, and it was August something, 2013. And I'm like, this has to be a fucking joke. This is crazy. It was like they're on the Rockstar Mayhem Festival and they're touring like amphitheaters. I was like, what? What I later found out was that was a day off, and a promoter got like three of the bands to do just a one-off show at the LC. So I bought tickets. I went on his website. He was offering meet and greets, and I'm like, fuck it, dude, I'm going. So I paid for it, and I remember that day. I was so excited. I was nervous, but I was so excited. So I got there early. I met a bunch of people that obviously there was a bunch of people for the meet and greet. I was like, holy shit, you know, I'm not the only one who had this idea. So I remember the doors opened. I stand in there. The only thing I brought was my Educated Horses CD for them to sign. And they gave us a poster sign. I'm looking right at it. I'll take pictures and put them on my Instagram. And then they walk in. And I was like so starstruck. I was like, holy shit, fucking, there he is. That's like, I turned white. Like, I was just fucking just like in awe. So I remember going to the table. I was nervous. I was like, I don't want a fanboy. You know, because I'm probably one of the biggest, bigger fans here. I don't even know. Like, I was just so nervous. So I walk up to him. Rob's the first person he met. I shook his hand. And they were at Sturgis, I think, like the day before. So, like, I was just trying to make small talk with him. I was like, hey, man, how did Sturgis go? And he looked right at me. He's like, it's actually a pretty decent place, man. People bring their families now, man. He's like, you got family. You should take them out there. And I was like, all right. And then he picked up my Educated Horses CD, signed it. Just like I said, I told the story earlier. I think next in line was John 5. I lost my shit. I mean, this guy's good. You know, he joined David Lee Roth's band in the late 90s, and Howard Stern would always have like Eddie Van Halen on around the time like David would release something. And, you know, Howard would always bust his balls like, did you listen to the new Roth record? He's like, I did. He's like, I don't know. He has playing guitar for him, but he needs to keep him. My kid's good. And he was talking about John 5. I was like, dude, Eddie Van Halen thinks this guy's good. Like, you know, and Eddie Van Halen's my all-time favorite guitar player. So, like, I freaked out. I was like, hey, man, huge fan. Your solo stuff's really good. I only got these records. And John 5 just kind of, like, giving me this weird look. I knew I probably just, like, he was so put off by it. And Ginger Fish was standing right next to him. And he's like, dude, he's done more with career than his solo stuff. You know he's in this band, right? And I was like, yes. I was like, you were really good with Manson, dude. He's like, thank you. And signed my CD and my poster that I got. I went to Piggy. And I was like, hey, man, your solo stuff's pretty cool. And he's like, thank you. And then I took a picture of them, shook their hands, and I thanked him. That was it. You know, meet and greets are awesome, but they're over in a flash. I did another one with Mastodon that was really cool. That was real more personable, and I got to talk to all of them. This one was just kind of like, okay, line forms here, but one of the more awesome things I've ever done. But the Zombie Picture Show was shot during this tour. And also, that show was probably one of the best shows I've went to, like, lineup-wise. I loved all three of those bands. It was just a great day. Machine Head opened, fucking killed it. Half-hour set, fucking killed it. Mastodon, I think, had a 45-minute set, and that's when the crowd just kind of was like, okay, that got lost on me, but I fucking loved it. And Rob fucking, oh my God, was awesome, was amazing. Probably one of my favorite people to go see live. I need to see him again live. But the Zombie Horror Picture Show concert film, it was shot, I want to say, in Texas during that tour, and it's just fucking awesome. It switches from like Super 8 footage to like HD, and I love it. Check it out. It definitely captures one of his shows perfectly. Now, speaking of concert films, he was supposed to do one, I think, in the mid-2000s, because he released an album called Zombie Live. That's a great fucking record, too. You know, and it's not on streaming, so I highly recommend buying it. I think you can buy it on vinyl, and I think it's a part of the box set that he released, but it's one of my favorite live records. And one of the things with Rob's set list is he has had quite a bit of solo material come out since Hellbilly Deluxe that he's kind of weeding out, like, the zombie stuff, because, like, in the early days, he'd pull out, like, deep cuts, and I think my dad said when he saw him in 98, he did Blood, Milk, and Sky, which is a deep fucking cut off Astro Creep, and I think the only deep cut I saw him do was Meet the Creeper the last time I saw him, which was in 2013, which blew me away. I was like, holy shit, I forgot about this song. And then
I'll have to look up when I saw him in 2009. When I saw him in 2009, he was fucking awesome. And the only difference in lineup change with that was Tommy Clefidos, or however you pronounce his last name. Guy was in Black Sabbath, did Sabbath's last tour, and he's in Ozzy right now. Was in his band. He's a fucking phenomenal drummer. No, you know, Gingerfish is no slouch either. He's fucking crazy too, but dude, Tommy. And I think, I want to say that was the last tour that they did with him, because Tommy ended up going to Ozzy's band and ended up going to Black Sabbath shortly after that too, and that's where he's at. Actually, here recently, Tommy filled in for Tommy Lee on the Motley Crue Stadium tour. So that's a where is he now? Well, still killing it. Tommy Clues is awesome, just like Gingerfish is. So enough about that. Check that out. Like I said, a really good document of really good representation of his live shows visually. And he did a live album too, kind of like a companion piece. I think it's Spook Show International Live or something. So anyway, enough about the Zombie Picture Show. His next film was 31. So Lords of Salem didn't end, wasn't his swan song from horror. He jumped back into the horror genre with 31. And to me, it's his most ambitious film. I don't think it got greenlit by any studios. So he did a Kickstarter campaign, which I participated in. I thought that was so awesome. You know, I felt like, oh, this is cool. I'm helping to make this movie. And Kickstarters are fucking cool. People look down on them, but they're really fucking cool. Like, if you believe in something or someone, you know, and you want to see it, like, their dreams come true, like, what better way than just help them out with it? And I thought that was really cool. What did I get? I got the signed Blu-ray, I still have, and then I got a signed poster. I didn't know the poster was signed until I dug it out, and I was kind of looking at it, and I noticed Rob had signed it in the bottom. I was like, oh, shit. And it was so cool because, like, he was, you know, now the social media age had really kind of taken over. I mean, you heard stuff with Lords of Salem and whatnot, but, like, now it's just kind of like he could upload to anything. And people were using YouTube more, Instagram, and, you know, Facebook to kind of promote stuff and whatnot. So, like, I loved, like, you know, hearing and seeing updates of this movie. And he met his goal, obviously, and what a really renegade, independent filmmaking way to do something. That's what I thought was cool about it. So I saw it opening night. I think Fathom Events did an event, and they had music videos, which I thought was cool to see Rob Zombie music video on the big screen, and then you watch the movie. I wasn't too crazy about the movie. It's a really ambitious film. It's a great movie. I need to sit down and watch that one again, too, just like the rest of his other movies. I definitely had it. But I love it because that was the... I participated in the Kickstarter. I have all the memories with that wrapped around that. So, I mean, I dig it, but, like, I'll have to watch it again. So his last extreme R-rated horror film was Three from Hell. Now, I'm mixed on this because I kind of felt it was unnecessary. Like I mentioned before, I thought Rejects was a great way for these characters to go out. You know, we're not, you know, we have these two iconic movies we can live with till the end of time. I don't really think a third movie or a prequel would do it justice, but I was wrong. Rob felt like he should revisit these characters, and good on him. I really wasn't too crazy about it because it just kind of, and no offense, I still love Rob. And one of the things you have to do when you're a fan is you have to be a cheerleader. You know, if your favorite band, artist, or filmmaker doesn't knock out of the park, you know, just be like, hey man, you know, it's awesome that you put it out there. That was awesome. You know, I got to experience something new from you. Wasn't too crazy about it, but hell, you'll get them next time. You know, kind of have that attitude. Don't be like completely right somebody like, fuck you man, I didn't like this movie, you can go suck a dick and shit. Like I said, I wasn't too crazy about it. There was some cool things. You know, I loved how he did a scene with Inagata DeVita synced up to at the end. I loved when Sherry was coming out of the, was walking, I think, to her parole hearing or some shit, and fucking the wild one from Susie Quattro was playing. I loved how some scenes that he, like some of the songs he synced up with those scenes, I loved that. And I really thought about it before I recorded this podcast. I didn't want to be too harsh about it. I'm not a huge fan. I still to this day, I feel it's unnecessary, but it kind of made sense because, you know, the Firefly family trilogy, they're all different. They all have purpose. You know, the first one is this iconic first entry. Rejects, gritty road movie that's like a Western, and Hell is pretty much the seven, like, all-out 70s, early 80s exploitation film of the bunch. So, like, they are all different from a style point of view. But, like, there again, I felt it was unnecessary. I will rewatch it again, you know. That's the thing, too. Like, if you're not crazy about an album or a movie, you know, when you first see it, later on you'll watch it. It kind of, I think this will have to grow on me. And that's kind of what it might have to do. So, enough with that. I don't really have too much to say about it. So, his last movie is a reboot of The Munsters. Now, I grew up watching The Munsters because it was shown on Nick at Night. And for those of you that don't know what Nick at Night is, after Nick at Night showed, like, their programming, which I think it was from, like, 7 to 9, maybe, except for Saturdays, you had SNCC. During the week, like, at 9 o'clock to, I want to say, like, I don't know why I remember this, 9 o'clock to probably about 4 o'clock was, like, Nick at Night was, like, old TV shows in syndication, and The Munsters was one of them I watched. Years later, I ended up buying the both seasons on DVD, and it came with, like, the movies that they did. They did one theatrical movie called Munster Go Home. And it's funny because back in the day when a show got canceled, they'd sometimes do, like, a theatrical version of it. Like, pretty much like a TV movie that they released to big screens to try to kind of, like, resurrect a show that got canceled. And Munster Go Home was, like, the result of that, and it tanked at the box office, and it's since become a cult classic. It's an awesome movie. It was the first time you got to see him in color, too. Shout Factory released a Blu-ray of that, and Butch Patrick, who played Eddie Munster, and Rob Zombie did the commentary track, and I definitely want to pick that up to hear that. They did another TV movie in the 80s, like late 70s, early 80s, and one of the kids from E.T., isn't it? He plays Eddie Munster. I think that's the only two movies around it besides both seasons of the show. So, like I said, I'm kind of acquainted with it, but, like, Rob's, like, this super fan. And I thought it was awesome that he was getting attached to it, because prior to him, prior to this latest reboot, I mean, they've tried to reboot that franchise for, like, years. I remember, like, I think they had a show on, or they did another TV movie in the 90s. You know, they tried to reboot it in the 2000s, and it just didn't work. And then, you know, they're trying again with Rob's. I thought it was pretty cool. You know, anytime somebody that I admire, or even just somebody in general, gets to do, like, a dream project, there's just, I'll automatically think it's awesome. And with Rob doing a Munsters movie, I just thought that was really cool, because, you know, how often do you get to do, like, a dream project like that? And I think that's getting lost in translation with the reviews, because everybody's like, oh, this movie fucking sucks, you know, Rob Zombie sucks, and all this other shit. But, you know, yeah, you're entitled to your opinion, but also you got to look at it like, hey, you know, this was a dream project for him for years, and he got to do it. Like, you know, you've got to give him, you got to give credit where credit is due. And that's kind of what I did. I mean, the movie wasn't too bad. You know, he definitely has a good grip on the material and whatnot. You could tell he's a super huge fan. He was throwing out, like, oddball references, stuff that obviously I didn't get, because I've only really watched the show once, like, one time through. And it was also weird that he did a kids movie, which I think is pretty cool. But, you know, hell, maybe he liked it so much he'll do, like, a Nightmare Before Christmas-like thing. We never know. That's the exciting thing with Rob. You know, you never know what he's going to do either with his music or his movies. And that's why I'm such a huge fan. And that's why I'll always be a huge fan of his. Thank you for tuning in. What do you think about Rob Zombie? What's your favorite Rob Zombie movie or album? Let me know somehow. And until next time, everybody, thank you.